All right, good afternoon, everyone. I call this meeting of the House Finance and Policy Committee to order. We have a quorum present. Next up is the approval of the minutes. Do I have someone who's willing to move the previous meeting's minutes?
So moved, Chair.
Representative Egbadje moves approval of the minutes for March 12, 2025. Any discussion to the meeting minutes? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. All right. Members, our housing challenge across the state has continued to deepen, and as we know, housing isn't just one issue, it's the foundation of everything, and they hinge on all that we provide, enough housing in every corner of the state. So as we start this meeting, I want to say thank you to everybody for the work that we have been doing to convey to Minnesota that it's time to stop treating housing as a side project and recognize it as a central priority and a solvable challenge. Today, we have a number of bills before us to continue this good work on housing. And with a full agenda, we just want to ask folks to limit testimony to 2 minutes. So you'll hear a timer go off at 2 minutes, and please try to wrap up your testimony when you hear the buzzer so we can make sure everyone gets a chance to be heard. First up, we have Rep. Chair Howard in HF 2296. Chair Howard, would you like to move your bill? And he will be joining us from Zoom today.
Thank you, Chair Kozlowski. I would move the bill.
And Chair Howard, I understand that you have the A1 amendment. Would you briefly describe the amendment?
Yes, Chair Kozlowski and members. This is a delete all amendment that greatly narrows the scope of the bill to essentially a single provision that has agreement among stakeholders.
Great, thank you, Chair Howard. Members, any discussion to the A1 amendment? All in favor?
Aye.
Say aye. Aye. All opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Chair Howard, to your bill as amended.
Members, by way of background, this is a bill brought to us by Minnesota Legal Aid through a stakeholder negotiation with Minnesota Legal Aid and Minnesota Multi-Housing Association to tweak legislation that we passed on a bipartisan basis last year. And by way of background, the legislature has beefed up protections under the statute that is being proposed to be amended here today, specifically related to tenants that are experiencing domestic violence who are allowed to break their lease if the tenant provides documentation of the violence as required by the statute. As you might imagine, this information is highly sensitive and if revealed could place the tenant in peril. What this delete all amendment seeks to do is make crystal clear that information is private. And that landlords don't have any sort of conflicting information about how to handle that data. And I'd be happy to have, there's no opposition to this D based on the good work of Minnesota Legal Aid and Minnesota Multi-Housing working collaboratively. And I'm happy to have Mr. Elwood testify to provide any further information.
Great. Thank you, Chair Howard. And looks like you have one testifier. And as you go up to testify, can you please state your name and title for the record?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. Ron Elwood with Legal Aid. Thank you, Chair Howard, for carrying this bill for us. And I want to thank the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association for working collaboratively with us. The problem that we're trying to solve here is that there under the statute 504B.206, as Representative Howard said, information that is provided to the landlord that reveals a lot of sensitive information about the violence that's taking place, the abuser and all that, has to be kept strictly confidential. We have had, unfortunately, too many cases where the landlords have argued that a general release form that was signed when the tenant leased up overrides this protective provision in 504B206, I don't think anyone thinks that that's the law, but since it's not crystal clear in the statute, that's all this amendment does, is to make it absolutely crystal clear that the provisions in 504B206 requiring confidentiality overrides any other general release of information form or any other priorly signed documents, and it's as simple as that.
Thank you, Testifier Elwood. And just really quick for our testifiers and for the folks in the room, then you can just call me Chair, not Madam. Thank you. Do we have any more members of the public wishing to testify in this bill? Any discussion to the bill, members? All right, to Representative Howard for closing remarks.
Just thank the members of the committee and Mr. Elwood and Minnesota Multi-Housing for their continued work on this bill.
All right, thank you, Representative Howard, for your good work on this bill. And with that, I renew the motion that HF 2296, as amended, be referred to the Committee on Judiciary, Finance, and Civil Law. All in favor? All opposed? The motion prevails, and HF 2296, as amended, is referred to the Judiciary on, to the Committee on Judiciary. Next up, the second bill on the agenda today is House File 1566. Representatives, the plan is to lay this bill over. So, Representative Hussein, if you want to make your way. Okay. A couple of testifiers. Okay. All right, members, we are going to be waiting for a few testifiers on our second bill, so we're going to move on to Representative Fisher's bill, House File 1854. Okay, great. All right, Representative Fisher, welcome to the Housing Committee. I believe the intent is to lay this bill over.
Yes, it is, Chair Kozalski. Thank you for the opportunity. I also have an amendment.
Yes, Representative Fisher, would you briefly describe your amendment?
Sure. What my amendment does is this is based on input from meetings I've had with some of the providers out there. And what we're doing is trying to address the amendment to make sure that people understand this would be for like capital improvements that are happening to a property and over the life of it. So we're trying to get some better descriptions in it. This is still a bill that's a work in process, so I do appreciate the opportunity to come through with what we've got now. And I'm looking forward to input as we are dealing with the issue. So very quickly, what we're saying is that as long as the renovation is has been made, that for the life of that renovation, even if owners change, you cannot evict the person without cause. And that's what the amendment does.
All right. Thank you, Chair Fisher. And my apologies, I have to remember to move the bill as well as to move the A1 amendment to bring it for the committee.
Thank you, Chair.
Members, any discussion to the amendment? All right. Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Rep. Fisher, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Committee. This is a bill that comes before you today based on experience some folks in my district are having. Over time, we have the people that I represent had been renting in the district. They do rely on disability waivers to help assist them in their living situation. They had worked with their landlord, and over about a 5-year process, they had made over $80,000 of improvements and investments into a property that was worth about $400,000. They were in one unit of a fourplex, and what this these improvements did was allow my constituents to be able to do more and more of their own duties around the house and not need as much government assistance and personal care attendance. So this was a way to make those improvements. It became an issue, and I did not realize this was a problem, until the original landlord sold the property. When they sold the property, the new landlord came in and said, well, I'm going to evict you out, even though there had been $80,000 of improvements. And for my constituents to be able to go elsewhere to another property, they'd have to spend another 5 to 6 years being able to do the same kind of improvements to make sure they could live there, and then still be in a situation that if the landlord changed, the new landlord could then force them out after the government has made these improvements. So one of the things that it kind of bothered me a little bit is that typically when government makes improvements into properties, whether they're using TIF dollars when they're working with local government units and building facilities, apartment units, using dollars from Minnesota Housing Finance, it's not unusual when you've got large government investments going in that there's conditions put in that if the owners change, that you're able to make sure that if you're going to, say, guarantee an investment is made so that you're going to have housing, rental units for, say, veterans who are unsheltered and for them to live there, then they say for 20 to 25 years, you're going to be making sure that you're going to have this many units there, even if the ownership changes. And that's what was driving how I wrote this bill and put this bill together, is that when the government is making significant dollar investments on behalf of the constituents, the people who are using it there, which also at the same time will help save other government dollars on a regular basis, ongoing basis for services that might be needed. It makes sense that the government now has an interest, and we should have some kind of condition on there saying if we're making a certain level of improvement, then we should also be saying then for X amount of time for the life of that improvement, we should be able to have the people be able to live there. Now, you could still evict people for cause, but you could not just say, okay, we're on a month-to-month lease now, we want you out, even though we've made significant improvements. And so that's what the bill is trying to do, and I do have my testifier with me here today.
Great. Thank you, Representative Fisher. And to your testifiers, and just a friendly reminder about the two-minute limit, first up we have Nikki Villavicencio, and on deck is Daryl Paulson. To the testifier.
Good afternoon, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nikki Villavicencio. I use she, her, sha pronouns, and I'm an enthusiastic disability justice advocate who happens to just be a Maplewood City Council member, chair of MCD and ACT Disability Culture and Leadership Specialist. I'm a mom and a partner to another tenacious disability leader here, Daryl Paulson. Today here, I am only to speak on behalf of my family, though. I'm here today to strongly support House File 1854, which protects tenants from unjust displacement when landlords receive public funding for rental unit renovations. I'm testifying not just as an advocate, but as someone who has personally experienced the devastating consequences of eviction following government-funded renovations. Right now, my family and I are facing eviction. My family advocated for years to be able to have home modifications that would allow us to live more independently. We have modifications on the outside consisting of a wheelchair ramp, multiple video cameras, garage door openers, turnaround slab, extra electrical outlets, and more. We have modifications on the inside of our unit consisting of fully accessible bathroom, two electronic door openers, full accessible kitchens, and other technology assistant devices. These renovations, funded through taxpayer dollars, were meant to support our ability to live safely in our home. Instead, our landlord is attempting to non-renew our lease and evict us, effectively pushing us out after benefiting from public funds. This is not just an injustice to us. It is a misuse of government assistance and a violation of basic human rights. House File 1854 is critical because it closes the loophole, ensuring that tenants are not displaced after landlords receive public funds for renovations designed to benefit them. Without this protection, landlords can exploit public dollars to increase the value of their rental properties while forcing our tenants, particularly those with disabilities who rely on improvements, to maintain the quality of their life. Additionally, House File 1854 prevents landlords from using unreasonable rent increases as a form of constructive eviction, a tactic often used to force tenants out without a formal non-renewal notice. If inclusion means what the Olmstead decision says it means, landlords should not be allowed to turn around and make housing unaffordable or criminalize these tenants for the very people those funds are meant to help. This is not a theoretical issue. This is happening right now in my case and in the lives of many disabled and low-income tenants across Minnesota. The state should not fund displacement, and House File 1854 ensures that public housing funds are used for their intended purpose, to improve tenant housing stability, not to force tenants out. I urge you to support this bill, and I thank you for your time, and I welcome any questions.
Great. Thank you so much. And next up, we have Daryl Paulson.
My name is Daryl Paulson. I'm a white male in a wheelchair, wearing a cap. I use he, him, and his pronouns. I'm here. I can't say anything better than my partner says it. She's the one that got elected. I ran for office multiple times. You might notice the last recent election, I ran against the governor to make him legalize pot. So that is my big claim to fame here. So not to say that that has anything to do with my modifications or any modifications that I'm currently doing, but it definitely, what I would like to say is the modifications that I currently have in the home allows me to come and participate remotely to this body. And that is why this is the first time you've seen me up here during the whole session, because I've been dealing with crappy landlords and bad lawyers. So please pass 1854 to the next committee as we work on it and as we work on protections for people with disabilities and to allow them to remain in their homes of their choice. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. And next up, we have Cecil Smith. And as a reminder, please state your name for the record as well.
Chair, members of the committee, my name is Cecil Smith. I'm president and CEO of the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association. We represent 2,300 members who serve over 600,000 renters who make their home in the 320,000 rental homes provided by our members. I'm here to speak in opposition to House File 1854 as amended, which imposes indefinite lease renewal requirements on housing providers with residents who receive government funding for renter accommodations. This bill fundamentally takes away property owners' rights. It forces housing providers to indefinitely renew leases, even if they need to use the unit differently, sell the property, or rent to someone else. The amendment extends this burden to new owners, meaning they inherit the renters they never agreed to lease to, limiting their ability to manage the property. This is an indefinite arrangement. There's no clear termination date. The bill states that the lease must continue, quote, for as long as the renovation is in a condition that it can be used, but never defines what that means. This could force housing providers into permanent lease obligations with no way to reclaim the unit. Even more concerning, the bill applies retroactively to January 1st, 2024, meaning housing providers who legally non-renewed a lease in the past year could now face lawsuits for violating the law that didn't exist at the time. This opens the door to costly legal battles, unexpected penalties, and raises serious constitutional concerns. Additionally, this bill introduces a form of rent control. If a court finds a rent increase to be unreasonable or disproportionate, it can be treated as a lease non-renewal, but there's no definition of what's unreasonable. This uncertainty discourages housing providers from making necessary rent adjustments to keep up with rising costs. This policy will have unintended consequences. Housing providers may refuse to accept assistance for accommodations if it means permanently losing control over the lease agreements. That ultimately harms the very renters this bill intends to help. Finally, this sets a dangerous precedent. If housing providers can never non-renew a renter because they receive government-funded modifications, what's next? This could lead to similar restrictions on other assistance programs, making it even harder to manage rental properties. For these reasons, I urge the committee to oppose the bill. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, do any members of the public, are there any other members of the public that wish to testify on this bill? All right, seeing none, we will move to member discussion. Any discussion on the bill? Representative Nash.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Fisher, the question of reasonable has come up a couple of times, and I'm just confused because, well, let's just pick an obscure number of $100,000 that gets put into the renovation of one of these units, and I'm just trying to figure out how long does that carry out and what are the mechanics of making your bill work so that what Mr. Smith just defined as a potential scenario doesn't become reality. And I'm just curious because the bill doesn't state that, and you know, you've been here longer than I have. Being nauseatingly detailed in our bills is probably always a good thing, and I'm just trying to figure out how do we make that mechanically work because it's not in the bill or in the amendment. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Nash. I would say that in terms of reasonable, it is one of the things that you raise a point on, and part of it comes into so often we're using the disability world, what is reasonable accommodations that we have to make in terms of meeting people's needs. So in terms of this area, I could see that I'm open to doing a little bit more in terms of how we define that. And the reason I say that, and this is where it gets to be a little bit more trickier, but I think there's a solution to it, is that it also comes down to what are the types of improvements you're making. And what I think of now, I'm thinking of in the accounting world, where I've spent a lot of my time in the homeless youth world, is that if you are doing a major improvement that has a life of 15 years, say of a building improvement, you know, taking out and removing cabinets, cupboards, those type of things, and determine that's a 15-year life, then that's what we would use as what's considered as reasonable there. Where if you were doing something that had an improvement that was equipment that was going in that had a 5-year life, that's what you would probably use in that type of thing. And that's where it's a little bit trickier, trying to say, okay, what is reasonable is taking a look as it depends what the item is and what are the types of improvements that are being made. And I would say that in terms of the improvements that are being made is when a landlord is saying, go ahead and make the improvements, particularly at this level, when you're taking a look at over $80,000 of improvements that are made on a facility that's $400,000, and then to say, okay, you can then also eject the person, and then the next person comes in, and the landlord has benefited from those improvements that have been made there. I can tell you that when this property was sold in, it was bought in 2017 for $400,000. In June of 2024, it was sold for $594,000 after these improvements were made. So the question is do we have a situation where the landlord is benefiting from government improvements that were made for the clients there that can no longer live there? Now you have to go to another place and you repeat the cycle. That's the concern that is out there. So trying to figure out how do we define it a little bit better. I'm open to that, and I'm open to, you know, people, anyone who's willing to work with me on it. I'm wanting to engage with some people to bring back something for a meeting next week.
Thank you, Chair Fisher. Representative Nash, any follow-up?
Yeah, thank you, Chair. So, again, because the devil is always in the details,
yep.
Let's say an improvement is made that might be, I don't know, $75,000. As things are not free when you do renovations, that's one component. But what if during that duration of the depreciation, if you want to call it that, the rents around that facility are also going up naturally?
Right.
If what I'm reading is correct, and I want you to corroborate that, you're saying that if the rents go up around it with that improvement being in place, the landlord or the housing provider cannot raise the rent? Is that correct? Thank you, Chair.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Kozalski, and thank you, Representative Nash, is that if the rent is going up in terms of reasonableness, if you've got your utilities going up, if utilities are part of it, if you've got the property taxes, we would expect that those kind of increases would occur. And what I'm looking at is that if you make these improvements and the rent went up because the improvements were made, it kind of sounds like, so government is paying to have the improvements made, and because they made the improvements, now the unit is worth more, so as a result, we're going to charge more rent because we improved the unit to take care of the people, but then at the same time, we turn around and say, well, you can evict the people the next day. You see the situation we're in. We've got a possibility where we can have some things happen that we are not properly served at, in the long run. That's what I'm trying to get around, is trying to address. It's not easy.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Back to Representative Nash for brief
remarks. Thank you, Chair.
And
Representative Fisher, we're laying this bill over, but the question is still begged as to what body is going to interpret reasonableness. And I'm sure somewhere in law, and I'm not a lawyer and I never want to be one, but someone, sorry, Representative Norris, and Representative Abgaji, so somebody's getting paid to define what reasonableness is, but that's not specified in the bill. And I don't know, I remember when I debated, I always had a copy of Black's Law Dictionary. I don't remember if Black's defines reasonableness in something that we can wrap our arms around. And I wish it did, or I wish we had it defined in the bill, because reasonableness is something that this whole bill seems to be predicated on as this bill rolls out. So with that, Chair, I will be done. Sorry to impugn lawyer jokes. But I really do think that, once again, Representative Fisher, I'm sympathetic to what you're telling us, but there is a tremendous amount of work that still needs to be done in just definitional aspects of this bill. How does the mechanic aspect of it work if the rents are going up around it? That's not defined, and I would really, really encourage you that if you intend to move this forward, and if it's to be included in an omnibus bill, that you spend the time and tackle those hurdles.
Thank you, Representative Nash and Representative Fisher. This bill, as a reminder, will be laid over so we can continue that work. Next on the list is Representative Ray Rauer.
Thank you, Chair. So I understand there are some concerns, and I'm really appreciative of the points Representative Nash brought up. However, I just want to remind that an eviction for a person with a disability can be catastrophic on their life and their living situation. And a government investment was made for these individuals, and we want to ensure that those investments continue to be able to be used for their intended purposes. So to me, this is really common sense, and hope that those adjustments can be made. I just want to also point out there can still be evictions based on just cause, so that doesn't take that away. And we really do want to ensure that the government can require accountability when we're providing funds, that we know they're continued to be used for their intended purposes. So because of that, I do urge support for this bill. Thank you.
Great. And next up on our list is Vice Chair Dotseth.
Thank you, Chair. And Fisher, you know, I understand the heart of this bill, and I appreciate what you're doing. However, the question I've got, and clarification, are a lot of these modifications retrofit for individual tenants where it may not necessarily fit for every tenant? If a new tenant were to move in, would it, maybe those modifications or improvements may not necessarily match the needs of each tenant that it's been done for?
Sorry, Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Kozalski and Representative Dotson. It is possible that the improvements that are made may not be what every tenant coming in needs. At the same time, they could be. And so that's one of the things that we have anytime improvements are made into facilities out there, is sometimes they will work for other tenants and sometimes they don't.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Representative Vice Chair Dotseth, do you have any follow-up?
Just a follow-up question. Additional follow-up on that would be, what would happen in the event that that particular tenant needs additional modifications done to that unit? Would the landlord then be required to do those additional modifications since they already started to receive some funding from the state?
To Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Kozalski. Representative Donaldson, in terms of modifications that might be made going forward, that would rely a lot as to what the funding sources are. And what I mean by that is when people who are disabled are moving in if they're being provided funding by government sources, whether they're CADI waivers or disability waivers. They have some flexibility as to what those dollars may be. And so you could have a situation where if somebody has a disability waiver and they need some additional improvements made into a unit, is and they would negotiate that with the government entity that they are working with, along with the landlord, and say how much can be done in a certain year, because they've got a cap of how much can be spent each year from their disability or other waivers that they have. So if you have eventually need like $100,000 worth of waivers, it could be something that could take 4, 5, or 6 years before they're going to be able to make all those improvements, and those improvements are then paid for by government dollars.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Vice Chair Dotseth, any additional remarks or comments?
I think I'm good. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. Next on our list is Representative Hussein.
Chair Kosolowski, you're doing a great job. You're looking good on that gavel. Representative Fisher, thanks for bringing this bill forward. And as you all know, that today is Disability Day at the Capitol, so we have like thousands showed up, and they showed up for reasons. We need to listen to them because they are the expert that they're going through all this tough time. One of the bills that we see. Thanks for our city council member Mabel Wood for coming testifying. This is an issue that it is affecting our community and our disability. Are coming forward because they are, we should be working with them. We should not be evictions. So we should not be having a more homelessness. And we already have a crisis for housing. So we already have a crisis of fitness. We already have a crisis for in the capital and the state, Twin Cities. You might not have in the greater Minnesota, but we've seen it on the watch. So for those people that disability are getting funding from SSI and getting funding from waivers, landlords should be working with them, should be listening to those people that that's facing as challenges. And I want to, this bill, looking forward to support Fisher for bringing forward. It's not only happening in your district, it is happening throughout the state. It's happening in my district because I have emails that disability are sending to me and saying, speak up for all of them. And I want to speak up right here on the mic. And I'm supporting 100%. I'm with the disability people for bringing this bill forward. And this should be bipartisan. It should not be an individual issue. It's an issue that we should need to fix it, whether we laid it out or whether we continue this bill. We need to fix this matter that coming forward. Thank you very much, and thanks for bringing this bill forward.
Thank you, Representative Hussein. We are going to move on to Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. And Councillor Villavicencio, did I do a good job? Thank you. You had, you said the word reasonable, and I was imagining what if I was in your shoes, like sitting there and come back to an apartment that's fixed, nice, like, hey, all right. And then all of a sudden the person sells it and makes the profit on, and I'm like, where do I go now? What happened? And depending on the rents around, I mean, Representative Nash did a good job of asking. I had written all this down when you were talking. He asked the same questions, and I'm starting to think more and more. I'm like, you know, trying to define reasonable is, it's going to be hard, but it can be. But maybe we define what's unreasonable and say, if you do this, this is unreasonable. This is not the conduct we're looking for. That might be easier, maybe. I don't know. I couldn't imagine, you know, because it's not like you can just move down the street and get another apartment. That's the problem. It's just how it works in our world. And Maybe what everyone's saying here, you know, just let's work together and see what we can do. That's where I'm at. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Representative Scraba. Next on the list, we're going to go to Co-Chair Igo.
Thank you, Chair Kozlowski. Thank you, members. Thank you, Representative Fisher, for bringing the bill today. And I do appreciate the fact that we'll be laying this bill over, because I think this really shows that you have a collective bipartisan issue here that we're trying to work at and fix the issue so we don't have unprecedented side effects. And that is what the legislative process is all about, is so we make sure to think twice and act once, and that's what this conversation is doing today. So thank you, Representative Fisher, for finding this issue and working on it. Looking forward to working together. I think the rest of us in committee look forward to working together as well. Thank you, Chair Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Igo. Next, we're going to move on to Chair Howard.
Thank you, members. And I actually have a question for Mr. Smith, if he's available. And you'll have to tell me when he gets up there. I can't quite see from my...
All right. Camera. Chair Howard, we'll be your eyes here.
Thank you. And appreciate everyone's willingness for me to be virtual here today and not get you guys all sick.
We appreciate that. Go ahead, Chair Howard. Our testifier is ready.
Thank you, Mr. Smith, and thank you for your testimony. I had a question. I guess first, there are many instances where landlords, even through the sale to a different landlord, accept conditions of rent levels, as an example, based on public resources near the property. Is that not correct?
Testifier Cecil.
Through the chair, that is indeed true.
Back to you, Chair Howard.
Right. And so I think that's what, when I hear the testimony from Ms. Both Nikki and Daryl, sorry, that, you know, in this property, there was $86,000 of public resources put in to that improved and grew the value that then transferred to that next owner. And that sort of created a beneficial opportunity for that new landowner landlord. And so I just wanted to get on the record that, yes, we do have instances where if public resources are attached to it, those comes with some conditions. And I think that's what we're after here in this bill. Just one more question. We are laying this bill over to do more work on it and hopefully bring it back next week. And I appreciated the discussion, and I think that Representative Fisher, I'm sure, was listening to as well. Mr. Smith, would you be able to share with the bill author, with the committee over the course of the week, you know, specific feedback on the bill or areas and modifications we would like to work together to see if we can move forward on this?
Chair Howard, thank you. To our testifier, Smith.
Through the chair. Representative Howe, Chair Howard, we already had a very productive conversation with the author. But to your earlier point, the matter of public funds being provided at a property, those are usually entered into freely on the part of the property owner, often tax credit agreements, TIF agreements, and so forth. In a tenancy situation, because of our federal fair housing laws and state fair housing laws, we cannot discriminate against somebody with a disability. That's against the law. It's unethical. And so when reasonable accommodations are made, those naturally come with the resident, and there is no opportunity for the property owner to influence that outcome. And so in that regard, it is a different scenario, because we have set the non-discriminatory rights of the resident above property rights in those circumstances. But this is going to a whole new level. And so we had that conversation with Representative Fisher, and we will continue to have that discussion, because we do believe there's a public investment and a public interest here. We also believe there are property rights and there are disability rights that all have to be balanced.
Thank you to the testifier. Chair Howard, are there any additional questions that you have?
I appreciate that. I appreciate your willingness to continue to engage. I would just say we do have a problem here. I'm really supportive of the direction of this legislation. And in the spirit of what really should be, what we should be after is sort of a mutually beneficial arrangement where if we're using public resources to make public accommodations, you know, in a sense, that's benefiting the landlord and any future landlord. That's adding value to that property, and it's benefiting the tenants. And so in our current system, though, the landlords are receiving benefit with no protections for people with disabilities with those public resources getting into it. And so I'm supportive of the bill, and I really appreciate the conversations I've had with Chair Igo and others on the desire to continue to work on this and look forward to the bill coming back to the committee hopefully soon. Thanks.
Thank you, Chair Howard. Next on the list is Representative Johnson.
Thank you, Chair. Can the testifiers stay up to the table, please?
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I have a number of, I guess, inquiries regarding this. Is who normally starts the process? In other words, is it the landlord coming to the government entity, or is it the tenants who find somebody, then that is gone to, then goes to the landlord?
To Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Kozalski, Representative Johnson. It's a combination approach. First of all, the tenants are going to have a waiver that they come in with. And so when they have a waiver, they have to first of all find a willing landlord to work with them because these are government dollars, and because they're government dollars that are going to end up with rent supports, people don't have to take those rent supports. They can say if you're being funded by government dollars, you can be turned away. So that's the first hurdle that has to be overcome in that process. Then what happens is that once a unit is found and it meets the conditions of the waiver out here, and I'm having to, and if you can give me a second, I'm trying to convert back into my human services world here, trying to make sure I'm following the process through here correctly, is that the government unit that's holding the waivers, they will have case managers who are working then with the tenant and who work with the landlord, who then put together the agreements. And what they usually do is the waivers will usually have a set dollar amount that goes with that tenant. And in that case, the dollar amounts may, it's for a 12-month period. Because usually leases go for 12 months. And then what happens on that is they have a lump sum of dollars that they have that they can use to assist them. And that dollar is going to vary from each different person based on what their disability is. And then they work with the government unit that they have to figure out, okay, we are going to need these different improvements for the unit that can eventually reduce the amount of aid that's being provided by personal care attendants. So what they will do is they'll prioritize what are the first things that are going to do, what are the amounts, and they'll work with the landlord, the tenants, and figure out what is the schedule. And in this case, this is something that was a process that took over 6 years as they prioritized what are the different things that we have done. In other words, probably some of the first things that they had was making sure that a ramp was put in so that they could get into the doors. You know, so these are the type of things that are looked at in the process. So it's a complicated process using a number of things. I'm kind of doing this, trying to do this at a real high level without having to dive deep into it. But that's overall kind of the view.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Representative Johnson, any follow-up?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you for that. So they present this to the landlord, and the landlord, property owner, has every right to say no, they don't want to do it, and especially if this goes forward and they start doing the math in their head, they have every right to say no, correct?
Thank you, Representative Johnson. To Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Kozalski, and Representative Johnson. Yes, the landlord has the right to say no to any of these improvements, and the landlord also has the right to say, because these are government dollars involved, even in terms of the rent supports, we have a right not to be able to say we don't want to rent to you at all. So they already have these other rights that are established out there.
Thank you. Representative Johnson, additional follow-up.
Yes, thank you, Chair. Just one more question. Isn't there a concern that if you start putting tails and requirements on the landlord that says you basically lose your rights as a property owner, that people are not going to want to do this, and actually it causes more harm in people trying to find places to live.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. To the author.
Thank you, Representative Kalowski. Representative Johnson, this is a good question out there. Would they lose those opportunities? And I would say that right now there are people who don't do any renting because you have government dollars at all in there. They do have the opportunity to say, no, we're not going to make these improvements, in which case if the tenants really need these improvements, then the tenants will go elsewhere, and then the landlord loses somebody who might rent the place. So there are things that go on both sides of it. I will say that the way the system is set up right now is that we can make these significant improvements, and for whatever reason, if you have a new landlord that comes in, is sold a month later, those people are out, even though they've made the improvements with the understanding that thinking that they're going to be there for a while. You know, when you're making significant improvements with government dollars, there are some ties that come in there. And yes, there are some property owners right now who will say we don't want to do those ties, as they do with saying we don't want to take any rent that is paid for by government dollars. They have those rights and they can continue. And that's one of the problems that we have in the disability world, is that people are challenged to find places to live because there are people who say, I don't have to take government dollars for payment for rent.
Thank you, Rep. Fisher. And to Representative Johnson, any additional follow-up?
No, thank you, Chair.
Great, thank you. All right, and to Representative Meckland.
Thank you, Chair. I don't know if I really want to put this in the form of a question, but maybe just some thoughts. In the earlier you testified that the house was sold in 2017 for $400,000, and in 2024 it sold for $600,000, and you're equating that to an increase in value, which I would strongly recommend you look at the market, what happened to pretty much every house at the time, because that was a big factor into that. I guess I'm going to have a question here. What would happen if the landlord was to either die or be foreclosed, and how would this then affect what happens to that property going forward?
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Chair Kozlowski, Representative Meckland. In terms of a person dying or a person who is going through foreclosure, it would come down to first of all, if this bill passed and what form this bill passed in. Right now, if you're going through foreclosure, as we've seen in downtown St. Paul, when a building goes through foreclosure, everybody ends up out on the streets and homeless. That's what we're seeing right now. That doesn't change that type of situation. In terms of the death and now it's transferred to another property, it would follow the same rules here, is that if you've got a property being transferred with the bill as proposed, as what probably have modifications happening in the future, is that the rights of the tenant would still be, they'd have to be evicted only if there was cause, as long as the life of the improvements were still there. And, you know, we're still working on the language here, so.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. Representative Mecklen, any follow-up?
Yes, Chair. So in that scenario, if somebody was to try to, considering to buy it, they would have to take into account that they are, if they didn't have a desire to be a landlord, if you will, that would have to be factored into that decision if they wanted to make it into a single-family home going forward, is what I'm hearing then. As a person who has done a lot of retrofits for different special needs, but mostly veterans, and or on the backside, removed a lot of these types of things when people either move or pass on. One thing that comes to mind is walk-in tubs. I've taken a lot of them out. They spend a lot of money on them, and only to spend more to get them gone because houses don't sell with that type of thing. So in the event that the tenant left the property for one reason or another, would the homeowner then be reimbursed under by state or tax dollars to put it back for somebody who didn't need, like, lowered counters or special stuff? I mean, would there be a funding mechanism for that?
Thank you, Representative Mecklen. Go ahead, Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Representative Chair Kozlowski and Representative Mecklen. In terms of restoring the dollars, I would have to check on that. I don't know the answer right offhand. My suspicion is that probably what would happen is that it would be up to the landlord to take care of that, but I cannot say that definitely. I'd have to take a look at what the agreements are, and there could be different agreements that are written between people as to what ends up happening, particularly when waiver money is being used.
Thank you. Representative Mecklen, anything further?
Thank you. Just a quick comment. These are some of the things that I was just thinking of, I mean, while you're working on this, to take into account so we don't have the unintended consequence of, because it kind of things have to work both ways, and there's a lot of scenarios where if it, like I mentioned, the foreclosure side of things, that you have to take all these factors into account, and as dynamics change, just something that the housing we've learned this year, many of us, very, very complicated. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. With two more bills up on the agenda today, we're going to keep things moving. So back to you, Representative Fisher, for any closing comments.
Thank you, Chair Kosolowski, and thank you, committee, for the robust discussion. I am looking forward to continue work. I do appreciate the input that I'm receiving from people, and we'll continue working with folks along the way. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you for the great discussion, and look forward to the work ahead. I now move to lay over House File 1854 as amended. All right, members, we're going to – oh, sorry. First time up here. We're going to move back to Representative Hussein's bill next. All right. The second bill on the agenda is House File 1566. Representatives, the plan is to move this bill over. And Representative, I lay this bill over. I understand you have the DE1 amendment. Would you briefly describe that amendment, Representative?
Thank you. I would like to move the amendment, House File. This amendment would take an important first step in protecting children. It is required landlord to make their tenant aware of near open water bodies and provide contact information such as for YMCA of the North, or any parent can contact organization about water safety classes and a swimming lesson.
Great. Representative Hussein moved his DE1 amendment. Any discussion, members? Seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All right, the motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Oh, all opposed. All right. The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Representative, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair Kosolowski and committee members for having me here today. This bill is very important, and it is a bipartisan bill. Many of both parties has signed up in this bill and because they care about this bill. Recent tragedy that highlighted the urgent of this young 4-year-old Waiz Mohammed drowned in Hopkins and 11-year-old Mohammed Mohamud drowned in Eden Prairie after e-clubbing and from home. Both children has been, they have autistic kids, and both of them non-verbal and they cannot speak. This life treatment issue, many autism individuals want to do to a sensory, sensitive, and a community barriers, putting them at risk of drawing an injury or getting lost. As you know, that autistic kids are very attractive to water, and many of them do not know whether it's a river or whether it's a swimming pool, but this bill will protect for those individuals and will protect for those kids, Americans, that we lost their life in the state of Minnesota. This will just enhance the protections. We're not dictating any landlords. All we're telling them, this bill to provide for those individuals when they're signing up the lease, give the options, give the opportunity. Tell them the concern, because we do have a 10,000 lakes, and autistic kids are not easy. I want to share with you a story that comes to my office. You might not see it, but it comes to me because they know the language that I speak. Katra, who has a 5 kids, autistic kids, the landlord is giving her hard time all the time. He want to kick her out of home. She doesn't speak the language. She's a single mother. and she is going through a tough time. She don't know how to hire a lawyer. She doesn't know how to speak the language, but she have a 5-kid statistics. And the landlord is giving her a hard time until I involve in my office. And thanks to Senator Sandy Pappas and others who step up with me and tell him that this is the law. This is what protects. We need to protect our disability, but it looks like many landlords are taking advantage. When I sent an email to the management, they did not respond. Guess who owns the house? Someone in California. I have to contact the management and tell them that this is the state representative, Samakap Hussein, who's contacting, because the kids, they don't know what they're doing. Sometimes they break windows. Sometimes they flush the toilet and put a toys because they have no clue. Even though they have a service and someone is watching them, they're very aggressive, those young kids, and they're fast. You haven't dealing with them, but I've seen in my own eyes, and it's affecting many minority communities. All we do in this bill is just giving protections. The law that exists in the state of Minnesota to make sure that those people have a protections. And I want to turn it to my testifiers.
All right. Thank you, Representative Hussein. Before we roll into our testifiers, I know that this is a very important topic, and we want to make sure that everybody gets a chance to be heard. So just as a reminder that we'll have at the 2-minute, you'll hear a buzzer. So just ask that you wrap up your testimony. And when you come up, if you can please state your name and title for the record. First up, we have Jillian Nelson, and on deck is Isaac Rubel.
Good afternoon, Chair and committee members. I'm Jillian Nelson. I'm the Policy Director for the Autism Society of Minnesota. I'm also an autistic adult, and I'm also a sibling to an autistic adult. When I was 17 years old, my mom lost her mind. My brother disappeared. He was 4 years old at the time, and we lived in Apple Valley in a rental property where we had asked him to put up a fence around a body of water near our home. They didn't comply. They said they had no obligation, that accommodations didn't apply, that their clubhouse was in compliance with the ADA. A neighbor found my brother when he was a foot and a half from that water. My brother is now 28 years old. My parents did everything they could that day, but a delivery driver had left the padded gate on our deck that my family had spent their own money putting in to make sure that my brother was safe. Someone else made a mistake, and we almost lost him. This is my story from nearly 30 years ago, but this is also the stories I hear every single day from families in our community. The number one leading cause in the autism community of death is drowning. It has been that way for over 40 years. It's not going to change anytime soon. This bill is something that, these are protections that renters and with disabilities already have under the Americans with Disabilities Act and under the Fair Housing Act. Unfortunately, individuals with neurodiversity disabilities and invisible disabilities often have to fight kicking and screaming to have those basic rights met, because laws such as the Fair Housing Act and the ADA were written in the mind of physical access needs, not thinking about things like individuals with disabilities that you can't see. These accommodations that families with autism require are usually very inexpensive. Things like allowing them to have an alarm inside their home, fencing around a body of water, or separating the property from a body of water, child-safe locks, all things that meet the guidelines of reasonable accommodation. As the individual from the Multi-Housing Association pointed out, landlords are required to follow these laws and provide reasonable accommodations. What this bill is going to do is take away the hardship of families living with autism from having to fight to prove that their accommodation is reasonable so that their children can stay alive. If I had a dollar for every time I, as an autistic adult, had to fight for a very simple accommodation that I was allowed as an adult, I could buy a home with a fence that would keep my own autistic child from drowning. Unfortunately, that's not the case. We just have to invest our time and our emotions into fighting. And this bill would give a lot of relief to our community, and it would clarify the expectations for our landlord community. It's a simple fix that isn't going to cost anyone anything that they're not already legally obligated to do. So thank you for supporting this bill.
Thank you for your testimony. And next we have Isaac Rubo. Welcome to the committee. And on deck we have Mara Arnoldi.
Did you say who? Isaac?
Isaac Rubel is next on the list. Is there? All right. And we'll move on to the next testifier then, as Mara Arnoldi in the room. And after that, we have Cecil Smith.
Hello. Thank you, Chair Kozlowski and the committee. It's an honor to be here, and thank you for the opportunity to participate. My name is Mara Arnoldi. I am a bilingual speech-language pathologist in the Hopkins School District in the Early Intervention Program. I'm also a mother to an 8-year-old child who is autistic. I'd like to state for the record that the opinions expressed herein are my own and do not necessarily represent or reflect the views of Hopkins Schools. I am here today to urge the committee to fully support this proposed bill of House File 1566, authored by Representative Hussein, which is a bill related to housing and providing those additional accommodations for children with autism. Chapter 504B.213 outlines three components that ensure more safety accommodations for children with autism living in rental properties who are at risk for eloping. I'm pleased the committee is taking steps to address this need for additional accommodations that would ensure a safe living environment for families. In my experience as a mother of a child with autism, and also over years of serving families who have children with autism, I have found that my child will frequently try to escape our home. I have heard that echoed similarly to with other families, that their child will try to escape. The term eloping means that this child wanders away from a safe caregiver or a safe environment. This poses a serious threat to the child's safety, and they're unaware that this is an unsafe behavior. I won't go over the statistics again since Jillian did. It would be redundant. But yes, it is the number one cause. Drowning is the number one cause. And I think there are many things within this bill that could help to reduce and prevent unnecessary deaths for these children. This bill really could be crucial. The policy change could potentially reduce those numbers. The ability for families to make accommodations and work with their landlords to be able to use things such as specialty key door locks, alarms, and other safety-proofing equipment would substantially increase their child's safety and provide parents a much-needed sense of peace of mind. We owe our children and these families better policies that can safeguard their child from eloping and finding their way to a body of water or other dangerous and potentially fatal situation. As a mother, I want to do everything in my power to keep my child safe.
Thank you, Mara, for your testimony. Just to wrap up the testimony. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Thank you. Next, we have Cecil Smith, and after that, we will have Anissa Haji Muhammad. Go ahead.
Chair, members of the committee, again, my name is Cecil Smith with the Minnesota Multi-Housing Association. I'm here to express concerns about House File 1566 as amended with the DE1, which would require housing providers to create safety notices for body of waters within a half mile of rental properties. First, I want to acknowledge that we support the goal of the bill. We're sorry for the devastating loss of these children who eloped to nearby bodies of water and tragically drowned. MHA is committed to working with the author to find solutions to prevent something as tragic as this from happening again. This bill unfortunately places an unnecessary administrative burden on housing providers, requiring them to track and provide information that is already accessible through maps, apps, and local government resources. The definition of, quote, an open body of water is overly broad, covering not just lakes and rivers, but also fenced pools and stormwater retention areas that are already fenced and pose little risk to renters. The bill's requirements are unclear. There's no guidance on how detailed notices must be, who can validate the information, on whether housing providers are responsible for updating it over time. It also applies even when the water is inaccessible, creating a misleading sense of danger. Most importantly, this bill does not provide a clear prevention benefit to renters. It also creates an unfunded compliance burden on housing providers with no clear enforcement guidance. Additionally, this sets a problematic precedent. If housing providers must notify renters about open water, why not for roads, railroads, or other hazards? Finally, this bill increases liability risks If a provider provides incomplete or outdated information, could they face legal claims for factors beyond their control? Rather than rushing this mandate, I encourage the legislature to consider a work group to fully examine the issue, bringing in subject matter experts to explore more practical and effective solutions. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. Next, we'll move to Anissa Haji Muhammad, and after that, we have Ideal Abdul.
Hello.
Oh, and I'm sorry. Anissa is joining us from Zoom today. Go ahead.
Dear Chair and members of the committee, my name is Anissa Haji Muhammad, and I am the board chair of Manga Voices, an organization dedicated to empowering individuals who are autistic or have related disabilities, as well as their families and support networks. Our mission is to amplify their stories, create supportive spaces, and provide education and training. I am writing to express my strong support for HF 1566, which provides critical protections for children with autism living in rental properties. Tragically, in just the last year, 3 children from the East African community have died by drowning, and many more have lost their lives across the nation due to unsafe living environments. Children with autism often have unique needs, including a tendency to wander or be drawn to dangerous areas such as bodies of water, busy streets, or other hazards. These tragedies are preventable, and this bill is a vital step toward ensuring the safety of these vulnerable children. This bill would allow families to request reasonable accommodations, such as safety modifications to rental properties, to protect their children from harm. It also prohibits landlords from retaliating against tenants who make such requests. For families raising children who are autistic, this legislation is not just about housing. It's about dignity, safety, and inclusion. It ensures that parents can take necessary steps to keep their children safe without fear of losing their homes. At Mangar Voices, we have heard countless stories from parents who have been denied the ability to install safety locks or make other modifications to protect their children. Some have even faced eviction for trying to keep their children safe. These families should not have to choose between their child's safety and their right to stable housing. And this is not just the parents that come to us, but it's also me. My 7-year-old daughter eloped recently, and I had to call the Bloomington Police Department to come to our aid and to find her. And when she was missing, the 40 minutes that she was missing, so many things came to my mind. And it was outside, it was negative 10 degrees, and all of the worst scenarios came to mind. Thankfully, she was found safe, but this story just keeps on repeating. And the more we wait, the more children die. And I feel like one child dying should be a big alarm for us, and we don't have to keep seeing this replay in every city and every state. We need to make this change, and this bill is a vital step towards making that change. I want to thank Representative Hussein for all of the amazing work that he's done to push this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for your testimony. And next up, we have Ideal Abdul. Welcome to the committee, and proceed whenever you're ready.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to be able to testify today. My name is Aidal Abdul. I am a Somali autism mom, and I am a trying to retire advocate. First, I want to recognize and thank Representative Samakab Hussein for his empathy, for his compassion, and for his relentless support for children with autism and their families throughout the state of Minnesota. Autism is a growing developmental disability. It's a disorder. One of the main characteristics is that they don't have these children and individuals. My son is 22. They don't have safety skills. If they like Target, but you go to Target and you take a highway, you get off an exit, you drive for 20 minutes, in their mind, they can just walk out of the house and go to Target without care. They are drawn to water. I understand the other side is saying it's unfunded mandate. But how much is a child's life worth? If you are a parent, if you have a niece and nephew, how much is your child worth? We have 2 children from the Somali community which has the highest autism rate, 1 in 16 for 4-year-olds, who are as American as apple pie, as Minnesota and its 10,000 lakes. How much is their life worth? How much is your child's life worth? I think it's important to work together with Representative Hussein and figure out a way to help these children and these families to stay in their homes safely. And I know Representative Fisher is not here in the Human Services. There are waivers that would fund for home safety modifications. under the 245, the home and community-based waivers. The problem is the landlords are often difficult to deal with. It happened to me, but I told the landlord, I don't care. I'm not going to swear like I would. I'd swear with him, but I told him, take me anywhere you want. I don't care. I'm going to put the locks and I'm going to protect my child because I knew in my mind I had that right. And I'd rather have fought him than put my child at risk. But not many parents are going to do that. Parents are going to be afraid. They're going to say, oh my God, I don't want to lose my home. I don't want to lose my apartment. So I ask you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, how much is a child's life worth? It should be priceless, period. Thank you.
Thank you so much for your testimony. And we're going to go back to Isaac Rubel. Is Isaac Rubel joining us in this room yet?
We don't have an Isaac, but we have one of the mother who lost her child. She could not come forward in front of us because she wanted to be on the phone and try to testify. It's very difficult for her. She lost her child.
Okay, Chair Kowalski, I hope I say your name right. Kowalski. I wanted to say a few words, but I have the mother on the phone, and I'm going to let her speak for a minute, and then I'll say a few words.
Yes, thank you. And can you please be sure to state the name and title for the record, please, and then proceed whenever you're ready.
Yes. My name is Abdikri Mora. I'm one of the board chair of Mangar Voices. It's an same organization that was Anissa was speaking. We are an organization that advocates for neurodivergent kids. I'm also a husband and a father with three kids. My middle son is diagnosed with autism, so I know firsthand what autism feels like. But I have the mother here. Her name is Faye Chade, and she is the mother of Wise, who was died in Hopkins June last year. He eloped in the water, and he died. Faye, do you hear me? Faye, are you there? Hello? Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, speak.
Yeah, can you hear me? Hello, everyone.
Yes, we can hear you. Go ahead.
Yeah, hello, everyone. My name is Faye Jere. I am the mother of Waiz Ali Muhammad, an autistic child who tragically died on June 10th, 2024. After a lobbing from our apartment in Hopkins. I am writing to, I am expressing my support for MNHF 1566. Can I be, hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, MNHF 1566, a bill that will provide families like mine right to an assault, safety locks in a rental housing to protect our children from the danger of elopement. I am deeply sorry that I am unable to discuss the details of why it is dead at this time. I am still grieving. However, I want to reach out to you, show my support for this bill. My hope is that my tragedy can inspire meaningful legislation so that no other family has to face what I did. After Waisa's death, many other mothers of autistic children reached out to me, sharing their own heartbreaking stories of their children's elopement risk. They explained to me how their landlords had denied them permission to install locks, despite their children being at risk. Some parents even install locks anyway, only to be forced to remove from them or face eviction. This is a crisis that demands action. Protect children and families should be priority of our elected officials. This bill will provide important protection, ensuring that parents can take necessary steps to keep their children safe without the fear of losing their homes. No family should have to choose between their child's safety and their right to remain in their home. I urge you to support MNHF 1566, this bill, to prevent further tragedies and provide important protection that so many families desperately need. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for your testimony and sharing with our committee. Any other members of the public that wish to testify on this bill? All right, we'll move to member discussion next. First up on the list is Representative Nash.
Thank you, Chair, and to the author, if you'd look in your...
We have one more testifier, please.
Okay. All right, we're just going to move back to our last public testifier, and then we'll come back to Representative Nash.
Thank you, Chair.
Could you please say your name and title for the record?
Yes. My name is Nasra Mohammed, and I am a housing developer and somebody who's been on both sides as a tenant and a landlord. Some of the same questions that keep coming up is the rights of the landlord, but I feel if you're willing to take funds for somebody's housing, the basis is that you're able to provide the quality of the house that the individuals need. So when landlords are renting to people with disabilities as of the previous bill and they're making modifications, or as in this one where the children have autism, that should be accounted for, whether as a landlord you want to accept that or not. And once you're willing to accept that lease, you should know who's going to be living in there and what conditions those people have in order to provide the safety that those individuals require in order to live there, especially if they're a minority, people who don't understand the law, their rights, and don't have a way to access resources. So I want to share my support for HF 1566, and I appreciate Samakap for being able to bring it to the floor today.
Thank you so much for your testimony.
Chair, can I add a few words?
Back to member. We're going to move back to member discussion. So go ahead, Representative Nash.
Thank you, Chair. Representative Hussein, if you look at your DE1 amendment on lines 1.11 through lines 1.13, you say that the written notice must include the phone number and website address for the YMCA of the North. YMCA of the North is only in the metro area, and this bill, if it were to become law, would have impact for the entire state of Minnesota. And I just think that if you're going to do this, you're going to want to adjust that language to look beyond just the handful of locations that YMCA of the North would be there for. And then I do have a question specific, Chair. On line 1.7, you say that these must be posted in a building with more than four rental units. Why four? Why not three, or why not whatever?
To Representative Hussein.
First of all, the people that came to me is the metro area, and I look forward expanding and working with you throughout the state of Minnesota so we can address this issue. The fourth area is close to the buildings, and a lot of people are living in public housing and subsidized, and those people are vulnerable. So we were thinking about it all throughout the state, but I look happy to work with you to expand this bill and to address it to all the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative. Back to you, Representative Nash, for any follow-up.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I just wanted to help you with the drafting problem. I mean, there are other areas that you would want to look at, because once we pass laws here, it is an entire statewide effect. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Nash. Next up on the list is Representative Vice Chair Dotseth.
Thank you, Chair, and Representative Hussein. I understand the heart behind this bill, and I understand why you've drafted this bill. I guess more of a comment. I think if you've ever done search and rescue, the first question, if you're looking for a young infant, no matter autism or not, one of the questions you're going to ask is there any waterways nearby? And just naturally, children are drawn to water. However, with that said, I guess I've got some concerns with the verbiage in this bill, just because we're a land of 10,000 lakes in Minnesota, so it really opens up a wide array of disclosure, and how do we go about that? I would maybe look at maybe working with some of the housing providers and asking them maybe there's a better way of just disclosing that there may be water near the property, and maybe help educating the tenants on what to look for, and just to maybe there may be a different approach that we can look at on this, I guess is what I'm asking. I look forward to maybe working with you further on this.
Great. And Representative, to Representative Hussein, if you want to follow up.
It is a common, yes, it is a 10,000 lakes and even more that we don't know yet. And it is, all we're doing is this, the landlord is to notify and let the people know when they sign in the lease, hey, there's a water, you know, like when the kids have autistic kids, they need to let them know that there's a water
and there's a swimming pool, there's a locations, so there could be precaution and making sure that they could be safe in the area.
Thank you, Representative Hussein. Vice Chair Dotseth, did you have any follow-up?
Just a follow-up, Chair. I just get concerned about maybe some unexpected consequences of future disclosure that this may open up by moving forward for other issues that may be out there. I mean, we start with water, but where does this go? But with that, I guess I just say definition of water, you could go into, is it water fountains? Is it, you know, there's so many different definitions of, you know, is it a little pool that someone may have next to a rental property that has they're for soaking their feet? So I guess there's, where do we draw a line with some of this, I guess, is the question. So it just needs further work to work as we move forward.
75% of the children that drone are under 5 years and older and younger. And we need to protect them. We need to make sure that the resources and we need to appoint them that there's enough opportunity for such a YMCA, so, you know, like that can provide for underserved community, like, hey, you can exercise and, you know, have your kids learn how to swim. And so we need to protect our young generations. And if you don't tell them the resource that's available, a lot of people don't know. A lot of people do not understand the language of English, so we need to tell them, all those underserved community, hey, there's a resource, there's an opportunity, there's a YMCA, you can have your kids to learn how to swim. So I will bring another bill in the future about the child autism kids and the swimming, because even the swimming lessons, after we did a study, I've been doing a research for the last summer and now, we need two or three instruction teacher to teach for those kids, to tell them how to learn. There's only one place that happened in the state of Minnesota, and that is in Virginia. And she's well-trained, she knows how to deal with the autistic kids, and she's certified. So we will work on that, and she'll be working with other states, and we will bring that program in the state of Minnesota so we can protect our kids, autistic kids, and the kids that you're dealing with. Autistic kids and the regular kids are totally different. I don't know if you have dealt with them in the past, but if it's not, I would have you to go visit some of the autistic kids and see how they react and how they deal with the rest of the other kids.
Thank you, Representative Hussein. Next on the list is Representative Ray Rauer.
Thank you so much, Chair. And I want to say thank you to all the parents that came to testify today. You are all very brave to come here and share your stories with all of us and your loss with us. So thank you for that. Representative Hussein, it looks like you made significant changes to the bill, and now it's really just about providing notice of the nearby bodies of water. So I think that that's a great change. It's just a little bit easier for those, you know, building owners, landlords. And I wanted to address, someone said, well, what about roads and railroads? And I think this is specific to bodies of water because of this neurodevelopmental condition that causes a specific attraction to water. So there isn't a condition with like a specific attraction to a railroad or a road, but this really is a condition that causes a fleeing child to be attracted directly to water. It's part of the developmental condition. So that's why, and I think it is important. And I think just providing the information is a reasonable way to go. So I support the bill, but I do want to say I do also recommend that it be changed because I want it to include information for any local provider that would be in my district also. So instead of YMCA of the North, like saying something like a local provider of water safety, swim lessons on that notice. And I think that's it. So I support the bill with that change. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ray Rauer. Next, we are going to keep it moving to Representative Mamagi Hilty.
Thank you so much, Chair. You look good sitting up there. I wanted to, first of all, thank the parents who are able to come and testify. I can't imagine the heartbreak that you have gone through. And because of time, I definitely want to respect time. I would like to just connect with Mr. Smith and just kind of hear more about your concerns and, like, what's your biggest concerns around this bill and get a little bit of, like, maybe data around some of the costs that you see. And we can have this offline. That's fine because of time. I want to respect that, so I just want to make that point.
All right. Thank you, Representative. And next up, we have Chair Igo.
Thank you, Chair Kozlowski. And I just want to appreciate Representative Hussein for bringing the bill to us today and bringing these voices to the People's House today. It's important that we hear about these issues and we talk about them and we work together to find solutions. I really want to appreciate, you know, Representative Hussein, you and I have had a lot of conversations on getting the bill to this point, and I really appreciate it because this is how we legislate to make sure we do things the right way. And the questions we're having here today as Republicans and Democrats, we're finding a way to make this bill work, not only just to make sure we protect Minnesotans, but we keep every single Minnesotan that's going to be a part of this conversation in mind. So I appreciate where we're leading the bill today. I look forward to continuing to work on it, and let's find a solution that works for everybody. So thank you.
Thank you, Chair Igo. We appreciate those comments. Next, we'll move to Chair Howard.
Thank you, Chair Kozlowski, and thank you, Representative Hussein, and to echo the thanks to all the community members that came to share your stories. I really appreciate Representative Hussein's your passion for this issue and willingness to work to modify the bill. I mean, this is a greatly narrower, more targeted bill aimed at hearing some of the feedback you received from folks to see what can we do this session to make a difference on this issue. And I just have to say, from my perspective, this is a pretty reasonable ask of landlords to provide a little bit of basic information on these issues. And to Representative Mamamia Hildsey's point, yes, would love more information from landlords about where they see the sort of burdens are. I did just want to note it was a little amusing to me in the previous bill. You know, a lot of the complaints were that it wasn't specific enough. And now in this bill, we're taking a very specific approach, focusing on bodies of water, and there's sort of concerns like, well, maybe that's too specific. So I appreciate that we're taking a target approach where the true, we've seen the true impacts for community members, and look forward to continued work on this bill on a bipartisan basis.
Thank you, Chair Howard, and members for this robust and rich conversation. Back to Representative Hussein for some quick closing comments. We have one more bill up on the docket to move through, so proceed when you're ready.
Hi. I just want to thank for community members and Faye. I understand she lost her child, but it's encouraged for her to come on the phone and testify. It takes a We want to thank you for coming forward. This bill is not going to cost any money. I mean, why are we making it complicated? We're just telling landlords, when you're signing the lease agreement, tell them the resource availability for those individuals that disability. So protect the life and address safety, concern that autistic children and adult at risk, supporting family and keeping their loved ones safe. It strengthens disability rights and promotes inclusive communities, prevent crisis and homelessness, and reduce a long-term social cost. So this is not like any cost. I don't understand why someone will come and oppose this bill. We're telling the landlords this is resources that's already available. Just tell those people and appoint them out before you sign and list. This is what's your availability. And we're making it very complicated. We are the legislator who makes the rules and the law in the state of Minnesota. We need to take care of those young kids that dying under our watch. Thank you very much, and I appreciate it. For all of you, we can have any discussion.
Thank you, Representative Hussein, for your leadership and to the families. And with that, House File 1566 is laid over as amended. Our final bill on the day is a bill that I will be presenting, and so I'm actually going to hand the gavel to Representative Agbaje to preside from here on out. Just musical chairs today. Keep you guessing. Okay, I'll take my pen though. Yeah.
All right, as Representative Kozlowski is moving up to the podium, I'll go ahead. Vice Chair Kozlowski, would you like to move your bill, House File 1385, the last bill on the agenda today?
Yes, Chair, thank you. I would like to move this bill.
All right, House File 1385 is moved and will be laid over in this committee. Vice Chair Kozlowski, I also understand that you have an A1 amendment. Would you briefly describe the amendment?
Yes, that's correct, Chair. The A1 amendment is simply moving to fill the blank appropriations and add $1 million per year for the next biennium for a total of $2 million for in a funding appropriation to the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency for a statewide tenant education and hotline service. This request really matches the problem with the size of the need and to fit with a solution that would be a well-promoted, responsive, free hotline service that serves Minnesota border to border.
Thank you, Vice Chair Kozlowski. Any discussion to the author's amendment? All right, seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? All right. Motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. So, Vice Chair Kozlowski, to your bill as amended.
Thank you, Chair and Co-Chair Igo and members. We appreciate the opportunity to present House File 1385, which, as I mentioned, is an appropriation through the Minnesota Housing Finance Agency for a statewide tenant education and hotline service. We've heard in multiple committees across our communities from renters who are facing eviction notices, seeking repairs that are going unmade. I have folks who have reached out about rat infestations that are threatening their physical and mental health, to questions about certificates of rent paid and beyond. In my community in Duluth, where about 50% of our housing was actually built prior to 1940, and for comparison, across Minnesota, only 16% of the housing was built before 1940. During college, as I was working on this bill, recalling my own experience of being a young person for the first time renting an older home in my community right across on campus. And every time it rained, we would get flooded within the basement. And it would be standing water. I walked downstairs one day and thought, well, that's an odd place to make lasagna for my roommates. And I realized that was mold. And when I reached out to our landlords who lived out of town, you know, we're told, just put a humidifier, even though the water was up to my shoes. So, like me, you know, everyone here knows somebody who struggled, had a dispute, faced a question about their rights while renting. And we've heard story after story after story. You know, hardworking nurse who was raising her grandbabies reached out during a really chilly stretch to our office to share that her heat had gone out. She couldn't reach a property manager and was forced to disrupt her family, her work schedules, pay for a hotel, and shuffle folks to stay with friends and deal with the added stress for over 10 days when they couldn't get a hold of their landlord after reaching out to maintenance to resolve the radiator heat situation. So I know time is limited. I won't go into all the examples, but we know that there are many. And the important thing is that Homeline and folks like Legal Aid provide this really crucial support, but with so many disputes across the state, we know that folks are falling through the cracks, as well as we want to make sure that folks get timely response to the questions and the needs that they're facing now as the clock is ticking. So Minnesota tenants really deserve accessible information about their legal protections and how we can enforce them. And so whether it's repairs going unmade, needing to know how if a landlord filed an eviction against them, privacy rights are violated, getting their security deposit back on time, or the like, Minnesotans need somewhere and someone to turn to for help. We know a warm, friendly, responsive, timely follow-up from a human being on the other end of the line, not to mention in multiple languages, whether it's English, Hmong, Somali, Spanish, that the process of going through this can be very intimidating and feel lonely and overwhelming. And so the last thing I want to say before I turn it over to the testifiers is that while Homeline here before and with this appropriation really works in the tenant lane, that it's also really important that they, and I think many of us in this room, believe that better informed landlords and are better are better landlords. And so just, you know, knowing that the organization also puts on many trainings and offers assistance as well as landlords and those who are thinking about becoming landlords is a really important piece of the puzzle here. So again, how we get to a Minnesota that lifts tides for all renters and landlords is this well-advertised, fully resourced, responsive, and fully funded tenant education and hotline service. And with that, I would like to turn it over to the testifiers to share more.
Thank you, Vice Chair Kozlowski. The first testifier I have on the list is Nicole Weiler. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Hi, Chair and members of the committee. Thank you so much for the opportunity to speak today in support of increased funding for a statewide tenant hotline. My name is Nicole Weiler. I'm the Senior Program Manager for Greater Twin Cities United Way's 211 Helpline, and I'm also a renter. United Way 211 is an important resource for Minnesotans who are navigating social services, and we answer hundreds of thousands of calls each year, and more than half of our statewide call volume relates to housing, utility, and rental concerns. Homeline, the existing statewide tenant hotline, is one of our highly referred services with 2,221 referrals last year, which is just 10% of their increasing direct call volume. Over the last 2 years, 211 has seen a 63% increase in referrals to Homeline. This hotline provides essential legal guidance for tenants facing eviction threats, lease disputes, and habitability concerns, and they help renters remain stably housed. Homeline provides essential legal guidance and advocacy to renters who often lack the financial means to secure private legal counsel. And without increased statewide funding, thousands of renters, many of whom are low income, elderly, or from historically excluded communities, will be left without the crucial support they need to maintain stable housing. So investing in holistic eviction prevention is cost effective, right? Additional funding for a statewide tenant hotline strengthens upstream housing stability efforts across Minnesota. It alleviates strain on state resources and promotes economic security for your constituents. So I urge the House to support this important service. Thank you so much for your time, and I welcome any questions.
Thank you for your testimony. Next on our list is Eric Hauge. Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Eric Hauge, Executive Director of Homeline. Thanks for the opportunity to testify. Homeline's a statewide tenant advocacy organization. Our primary program is a free and confidential legal hotline available to any renter in Minnesota via phone or email to advise about their tenant rights and responsibilities, including any specific rental housing dispute they experience. We also provide additional services for tenants, landlords, property managers, and the public, including trainings and education on tenant-landlord issues for all audiences, eviction prevention, and tenant organizing. Close to 30% of Minnesota's households live in rental housing, which is approximately 650,000 households. These folks rely on a complicated framework of federal law, state statutes, case law, local codes and ordinances, and lease provisions to ensure their homes are well-maintained, healthy, safe, and that they're protected against invasions of privacy, displacement, and other harmful conflicts related to disrepair or mismanagement of their homes. In your packet, you'll see a one-page summary of our hotline services provided last year throughout the state. We advise nearly 20,000 households from every count, all 87 counties, including over 2,200 clients from districts just represented among the members of this committee last year. The past several years have been the busiest in the 33-year history of our organization, and we've advised on a wide variety of topics. To be clear, we're not always giving people good news. Sometimes we're explaining how a client has violated the law or their lease and the best way to remedy that in a way that can hopefully stabilize their housing. Our programs are relied upon throughout the state. Multiple state government departments, counties, and cities share our multilingual tenant hotline information as a resource. When the Minnesota Legislature and Minnesota Housing first initiated a contract with our organization in 2013, we served around 12,000 households.
Testifier Hauge, sorry, if you could just wrap up. We are running short on time. Thank you.
I sure can. Yep. What I was just trying to get at is that our new client volume is much higher than that. Inflation has risen. Our call volume has increased, but the contract has not. It's challenging to maintain our response time. And so from our perspective, what we hear is from the needs of our clients, a properly funded, thriving tenant education hotline service would provide wages and benefits that are competitive in our field. It would ensure that the scope and the capacity of our legal staff is adequate to tackle the trends in the rental market. It would expand free trainings to more audiences. It would provide more accessible ways to access legal advice. It would be proactively advertising services throughout the state. And that's about it. So I will end there and just want to thank you again for the opportunity to testify. I can answer any questions.
Great. Thank you so much. Are there quickly any members from the public wishing to testify? Okay, I'm not seeing any hands. All right, so we have a couple minutes for member discussion, and we can go a couple minutes over, but I don't want to take people too long. So we'll start with Representative Rehrauer.
Great. Thank you, Chair. Oh, sorry. Thank you, Representative. can you talk just a bit about how this prevents evictions and therefore helps to prevent homelessness, which I heard you say alleviates strain on state resources? And that's really exciting to me because it's good for people, but then it's also good for limited resources to get upstream of a problem.
Testifier Hauge or Representative Kozlowski?
Chair and Representative, one of our projects that I didn't get a chance to talk about is our eviction prevention project. Since 2019, we have mailed a multilingual letter to every residential eviction defendant in the state, offering free legal advice, and we have a separate number that we offer those folks. So we advise just thousands and thousands. We've, I think, mailed over 60,000 multilingual letters to eviction defendants throughout the state and provide free legal advice and referrals to legal aid when it's necessary.
Representative Rehrauer, anything further? All right. Any other member discussion? All right. Not seeing any. Closing comments, Vice Chair Kozlowski.
All right. Thank you, Chair, and members, again, for the opportunity to share more about this really important funding need and continuing to carry forward the good work, as we've heard in the testimony. As more and more tenants and landlords are reaching out to Homeline, whether it be for lease questions, fines, privacy issues, and beyond, it's a good thing. It means that more and more folks across the state are figuring out their legal and practical options when facing the possibility of losing their home and making sure that their home is more cozy. One thing I want to highlight in the packets in the data is that 89% of the callers are low income and 42% extremely low income. And in a little mark, you'll also see that nearly 50% of callers are actually from historically excluded communities. And with the question and with the surge in evictions, with more court filings across the state, Hennepin, Ramsey, to Blue Earth, to Carver, to Clay, Dakota counties, and beyond, Homeline's there for these households. And we know that Minnesotans are struggling to afford their lives with sudden job loss or unexpected expense. Just means that there's not enough to cover housing, and 90% of those evictions coming from non-payment of rent. That Homeline prevented in the last year alone over 2,258 evictions. And also 37% of the renters with repair issues who contacted and followed Homeline's advice were more likely to get their problems fixed. And so with less expense, less anxiety, less feeling like you just kind of have to suck it up or it could be worse, thanks to Homeline, it means a whole lot more of it doesn't have to be this way. And so with this fully funded, fully resourced statewide tenant education hotline service, we can make sure we have more folks in stable, cozy, secure homes for all. So thank you, and encourage your support for this in our omnibus package.
All right. Thank you. Vice Chair Kozlowski renews their motion that House File 1854 as amended be laid over for possible inclusion. So that concludes our business for the day, but our next hearing is tomorrow, Wednesday, March 19th, also my birthday. Chair Igo, would you like to say anything about tomorrow's agenda?
Just looking forward to seeing everyone tomorrow. Thank you.
Sounds good. Thank you. And with that, we are adjourned.